this week, the Haftorah is not the Haftorah that when you read in Shul is not the Haftorah of Parashas Vayakel. Rather, this week, because the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Ad Hasheni, we read Parashas Shkolim. We go back, we read about the Shkolim from last week's Parasha, Parashas Kisisa. We read the Haftorah for Parashas Shkolim, which comes from Sefer Melachim Beis, Perek Yod Beis. And before we can get into Haftorah itself, we need a little bit of background. We know that the kingdom of the Jewish people was split into two, the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, and the kingdom of Yehuda, which was Yehuda and Benjamin in Yerushalayim. One of the Malchei Yehuda, one of the kings of Yehuda, was Yehoshaphat, and around the same time, the king of Israel was Achav. Now they did a shidduch together, and Achav had a daughter whose name was Asalia, and she married Yehoram, who was the son of Yehoshaphat. They had a child, his name was Achaziah, who took over the kingdom after his father Yehoram. Achaziah's wife's name was Tzivya, and they had a son whose name was Yehoyosh. So we have Asalia, who's the mother of Achaziah, and Achaziah has a son, Yehoyosh. Now, Achaziah was killed by a fellow named Yehu. Yehu was told by the Navi, by the messenger of Elisha, that he was supposed to kill the king of the Melech Yisrael at the time, and he killed Achaziah as well. Asalia, who was Achaziah's mother, was not very pleased with what happened, and therefore she attempted to eradicate any of the children, any of the family of the royal family, any of the progeny of the royal family, so that she herself could take over the throne. And she was pretty successful in doing that, except for the fact that there was one child, Yehoyosh, who was a little baby at the time, who was hidden in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the attic of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He was hidden there, so Asalia couldn't get to him. So Asalia thought that she had eradicated all the children of the royal family, and she took over as the queen, as the ruler of the Malchus of Yehuda. And meanwhile, Yehoyosh was being taken care of and in the Aliyas Kodesh HaKadoshim, the attic of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which lasted for 6 years. And finally, when he was about 7 years old, then Yehoyada, who was the Kohen Gadol at the time, he decided that it was already time to bring Yehoyosh out, that he should be the king over the Malchus of Yehuda. It's time for him to become the king, and therefore, so he got the ball rolling, and he had his people come and take Yehoyosh out and protect him. And Asalia, when she heard what was happening, she came to see what was going on. And Yehoyada had Asalia killed. They took her outside the Beis HaMikdash and they killed her there. And then they brought out Yehoyosh. Now Yehoyosh could be the king. He no longer has to fear from Asalia. Asalia was his grandmother, his father's mother. No longer have to worry about her killing him. Now, as long as Asalia was in control, Asalia was the daughter of Achav. And Achav, for the majority of his life, was an Oved Avodah Zarah, like we learned about last week. Right? He served Avodah Zarah Baal. So Asalia herself was also very much dedicated to the Baal. So when she was in control, things were focused on the Baal. And so we'll see that's very relevant to what we'll learn in the Haftorah here. So let's start from the beginning. Ben Sheva Shonim Yehoyosh B'molchoi. When Yehoyosh became king, he was 7 years old. 7 years old, he became king. Bishnas Sheva Liyehu Molach Yehoyosh. In the 7th year of Yehu, Yehoyosh became king. 7 years previously, Yehu had killed the previous Melech Yisrael and taken over. And at that time, that was when Yehoyosh, around the time when Yehoyosh was born, and he was hidden in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'arboim shono molach b'Yerushalayim. For 40 years, he ruled in Yerushalayim. V'shem imo yitzivyo mi Be'er Sheva. The name of his mother was Tzivyo, who came from Be'er Sheva. And the Mefarshim say that this woman Tzivyo, despite the fact she was married to Achaziahu, who was a Rasha, But she herself was a righteous woman, and she had a strong positive influence on Yehoyash, and that's why the Torah tells, that's why the Navi tells us that about his mother Tzivya, because she had very positive effect, influence on his life. The Rebbeinu Sinaibshitz says that it's from the fact that it says V'shem Imoy, before it says her name, it introduces her as V'shem Imoy Tzivya, that's an indication that she was a righteous woman. The Abarbanel writes that she was Isha Toiva B'maaseha, that she was good in her deeds. Ve'ileo noto Yehoyosh ki also Hayosh B'nei Hashem Kol Yomov. The next passage is going to tell us that he went on the proper path of Hashem all days of his life. So that's the Novi is telling that it was a result of the fact that his mother was Tzivim Be'er Shava, who was a righteous woman. She was Toiva B'maaseha, she did good deeds, and therefore that had a positive influence on Yehoyosh, which led to him leading his life in the way of ways of Hashem. Pasuk Gimel says, "Vayask Yehoyosh Hayosher be'ini Hashem kol yomov." Asher hayrohu Yehoyada akoyin. Yehoyosh. The simple reading of the pasuk is Yehoyosh did what was proper in the eyes of Hashem his entire life. That which he was instructed by Yehoyada akoyin. But Yehoyada the koyin, Yehoyada who was the koyin gadol, he was the one who facilitated Yehoyosh's hiding in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, his being able to save there, be safe there, and the one who brought him out so he could become the king. And he was his Rebbe, he taught him, he instructed him, and that he was perhaps the more positive influence, he was the responsible for more of the positive influence. His mother was a positive influence, but Yehoyada HaKohen was a primary influence on Yehoyosh, on Yehoyosh. And he instructed him how to live his life according to the ways of Hashem. And the difficulty is that the pasuk seems to indicate that Yehoyosh remained devoted to the ways of Hashem his entire life. However, if we take a look in Divrei Hayomim, the pasuk seems to indicate that this is not exactly the case. Take a look in source number 2. The pasuk in Divrei Hayomim says, "V'acharei mois Yehoyada, after the death of Yehoyada the Kohen, bo sora Yehuda." The officers of Yehuda came, v'yishtachavu l'melech, and they bowed to the king, to Yehoyosh. Oz shoma ha'melech aleihem, then the king Yehoyosh listened to them. V'yazvu espes Hashem melekei avoseihem. At that point, they abandoned the house of Hashem, the God of their forefathers. V'yavdu es v'ashein v'su atzabim, and they served the avodah zarah trees and the idols. V'yihi ketzef al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim v'ashmosam zois. And there was great anger against Yehuda and Yerushalayim because of their sins, because of these sins that they went after the Avodah Zarah. So it's not clear if Yehoyosh himself went after the Avodah Zarah, or it was only that he allowed the Sora Yehuda, the officers of Yehuda, to go after the Avodah Zarah. But the Psukim in Divrei Hayom seem to indicate that after the death of Yehoyada, Yehoyosh wasn't so firmly attached to the ways of Hashem. It seems that after that there was some deviation from the ways of Hashem, that at that point there was Avodah Zarah was introduced. So how do we reconcile that with the pasuk in front of us in Sefer Melachim? And the Mefarshim say that we have no choice but to say that when the pasuk says that Yehoyosh did what was proper in the eyes of Hashem, it was only during the life of Yehoyada, as is apparent from the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. So you have to read the pasuk slightly differently. Instead of reading it the way the trop seems to indicate, that the pasuk should be read by Yas Yehoyosh Hayosh Beni Hashem Kol Yomov, that Yehoyosh did what was proper in the eyes of Hashem's entire life. Asher Hayrohu Yehoyada Akoyin. It was based on the instructions of Yehoyada the Koyin. But according to this, once based on this seeming contradiction between this pasuk and the pasuk of Divrei Hayomim, we're going to be forced to read the pasuk slightly differently. Vayas Yehoyosh Hayosh Beni Hashem. Yehoyosh did what was proper in the eyes of Hashem. Kol yom asher hirohu Yehoyada HaKoyin. All the days that Yehoyada instructed him. As long as Yehoyada HaKoyin, as long as his Rebbe Yehoyada was there to instruct him, then he followed in the ways of Hashem. He said he did what was proper in the eyes of Hashem, but only all the days that Yehoyada instructed him. Once Yehoyada passed away, he was no longer there to instruct him, then Yehoyada moved away to some extent from the ways of Hashem. What exactly happened? What's the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim referring to? If you take a look on the next page, The Medrash Tanhuma Parshas Vayera says, it's talking about different people that made themselves into gods. Right? Parshas Vayera is directly addressing Paroi. Talks about Paroi made himself into a god. We spoke about that in Parshas in Haftarah Parshas Vayera. Nebuchadnezzar as well. And it says, Yoyosh minayin she'oso atzmo yaloi. How do you know that Yoyosh made himself into a god? Tichsev, quotes the Pasuk Devei Hayomim, V'achrei Moisi Hoyada, after the death of Yehoyada, Bo'u Sarei Yehuda, V'ishtachem Ul HaMelech, that the officers of Yehuda, they came, they bowed to the king. Oshom HaMelech Aleihem, that Yoyosh heard what they were saying, and he agreed with them. They were bowing to him. The Medrash was telling us they were bowing to him because they considered him to be a god, a deity. And Yoyosh went along with it. He was happy to go along with it. What does it mean they bow to the king? They made him into a god, into a deity. What was the reasoning? What was the rationale? Amruloi, they said to him, not the fact you're a god, you would not have come out alive after 7 years in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You spent your the early years of your childhood, from the time you were born until the time you were 7 years old, you spent your life in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And we know that a person is not allowed to go into Kodesh HaKadoshim. Only the Kohen Gadol once a year can go into Kodesh HaKadoshim. But other than that, a person can't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. If you were able to live in the Kodesh HaKadoshim for such a long time, 6-7 years, so you must be a god, you must not be human, you must be a god, you must be a deity. And therefore, they proclaim to be a god. And Om Elohim Kahu, he said, yeah, you're right, indeed. That's absolutely. He accepted upon himself to be treated as a god, and that was the way in which he deviated from the ways of Hashem, albeit only after the death of Yehoyada. So after Yehoyada, only during the life of Yehoyada, his Rebbe, that's only during the life of Yehoyada, HaKohen, who was his Rebbe, that's when he was also Hayosha Meni Hashem. He did what was proper in the eyes of Hashem. But after the passing of his Rebbe Yehoyada, when his Rebbe was no longer around, so then he was not able to keep it up, and at that point, he strayed from the ways of Hashem. It's interesting, not necessarily to compare the two, but we find a similar idea by Shlomi HaMelech, that the Gemara says that as long as Shlomi HaMelech's Rebbe, Shimi ben Gera, was alive, Lo Nosa Shlomi as Bas Paroi. Shlomi didn't marry Bas Paroi. We find in the Novi, in Melachim Aleph, that after the passing of Shimi ben Gera, after he was put to death, but after that, then Shlomi went and he married Bas Paroi. And the Gemara says there, that's why it's important for a person to live near his Rebbe. Because as long as Shimi ben Gera was alive, Shlomi had the reverence from his Rebbe. He would never do something like marrying Bas Paroi. You know, again, when he married Bas Paroi, he had the best of intentions. But certain things, in the presence of his Rebbe, certain things he hesitated from doing as long as his Rebbe was around. Now, it's perhaps not exactly the same, as we'll explain. So what exactly went wrong? What went wrong here? If Yehoyosh, he had a Rebbe, Yehoyada HaKoyei, so he taught him, he instructed him. So what went wrong? What happened after the death of Yehoyada? So one answer we could say is like we just quoted from Shlomi HaMelech. Shlomi HaMelech also, as long as his Rebbe was alive, so he lived with a certain reverence, a certain respect for his Rebbe, a certain awe for his Rebbe, which prevented him from doing anything that his Rebbe wouldn't approve of. But now, once Yehoyada wasn't around anymore, perhaps then Yehoyosh didn't have that figure, that the Rebbe in front of him, and, that awe, that same awe that he had previously, and then he felt a little bit more liberty to do things that he wouldn't have done when his Rebbe was alive. But it seems the Malbim over here points out that it seems that the pasuk itself indicates to us what went wrong. The word that's used by the Pasuk, by the Navi, to tell us that Yehoyada was guided Yehoyosh's life, he kept him on the path of doing Hayosha Beni Hashem, that which was proper in the eyes of Hashem, the word that's used is Hayrahu, that he instructed him, as opposed to the word Limdai, or a similar word that he taught him. Right? There's a word Hayrahu. And there's another word, lindoi, to loimei. There's a word of loimei, to learn. There's a word of hoira, to instruct. And the Malbim says, in my opinion, there's a big difference between these two words. Hoirahu is, as we translated, instruction. Instruction means, I tell you what to do. I tell you should do this. I tell you when you should do it. I tell you how you should do it. I tell you you shouldn't do that. I tell you perhaps under what circumstances you could do that. I give you instructions and directions. I tell you what to do and what not to do. That's how you roll. Instructions, that's it. Very simple, very straightforward. Limud, on the other hand, says the Malbim, indicates what I explain to you, I teach you, I tell you you should do this, why should you do this? You have to do it this way? Why does it have to be done this way as opposed to a different way? I tell you not to do this, I tell you why you can't do that. Oh, and I tell you because this is the reason why we can't do it, therefore, under certain circumstances, it's okay and it's acceptable. Limud indicates a deeper understanding the reasoning behind things, not just getting simple, straightforward directions. Hayrahu indicates that Yahyada, when he taught Yahayash, he taught him just the basics, just the straightforward ideas, do this and don't do that. And as long as Yahyada was alive, that was fine. Because as long as Yahyada was there to answer Yahayash's questions, so if he had a question, if he didn't know what to do, he would ask Yahyada, and Yahyada could tell him what to do, and he could do the right thing. But once Yahyada wasn't around anymore, since all of his learning from Yahyada, he was always dependent on Yahyada to tell him what to do. He didn't necessarily understand always why he was doing what he was doing, or why he should not do that which Yahyada told him not to do. He couldn't apply it anymore after Yahyada's passing. Once Yahyada wasn't there to instruct him, then he no longer could figure out on his own what to do. Because Yahyada had never trained him to understand what the reasoning behind things was. And therefore, he was left without direction. He couldn't make the decisions on his own because he didn't have that background. He didn't have that deeper understanding of what he was doing and what he was not doing in order to be able to apply it on his own. And this is a very important idea when it comes to Limud HaTorah. Limud HaTorah is very important, that learning shouldn't just be on a superficial level. To learn, to know, this is what the halacha is, we have to do this, we shouldn't do that. Rather, it's important to when we learn Torah, to learn, to be able to understand the deeper reasons, the deeper the lessons, the ideas, the messages behind everything that we learn, for a number of reasons. The Gemara Masechet Kedushin, source Dalet, on page 2, says, Tana Rabbanan, a rather well-known Gemara, Rabbanon taught, Vishinantam, the Pasuk says, Kriya Shema Vishinantam, you should teach them. The Gemara says, Gemara Darshan, Shiyudivrei Torah Mechudadim Beficha, the words of Torah should be sharp in your mouth. Shem Yishal Lecha Adam Davar, someone asks you something, Al Tigam Gein V'Toymar Loi, don't hesitate, and say to him, Elo Emor Lo Miyad, tell it to him right away, don't stutter, and then tell it to him right away, it should be sharp on the tip of your tongue. And the simple reading of the Gemara would seem to be that the Gemara is telling us that you should know the Torah, learn the Torah, and review it, should know it so well that it should always be on the tip of your tongue. If someone asks you something, you can answer the question, you can tell them exactly what it says in the Torah. Someone asks you, where does the Torah talk about such and such a thing? You tell them, oh, the Torah Pasuk says this. What does the Gemara say about this case? What does it say about this halacha? So you can tell them the Gemara that says it. That's what it would seem from the Gemara. The Gemara tells it. The point is, you should know the Torah so well that you should be familiar with the Torah. You should be able to quote it anytime the person asks you. If you take a look at Hey, take a look at what Rashi says on this Gemara. Yuhim chudon beficha, Rashi adds something very important. Rashi says, Chazer aleihem, review them. That's one thing. But the second thing, says Rashi, uvidoik ba'oinkom, and you should dig deep into the depths of the Torah. Shem yishalcha adam le'tistorich le'gamgei mele shetucha lo'ymer miyad. If someone asks you something, you shouldn't have to hesitate, you shouldn't have to stutter. Rather, you should be able to tell him right away. Rashi adds, uvidoik ba'oinkom. It's not just a matter of reviewing, so you should know all the Torah, you should be able to quote verbatim the entire Chumash, the entire Tanakh, and the Gemara, say it backwards and forwards. That's not what it's all about. That's one aspect. But there's another important criteria, which is v'doik ba'oimkan. You should dig deep into the depths of the Torah, to understand the words of Torah. So if someone asks you something, even if it's not something that's explicit in the Torah, if someone asks you a question, what's the halacha regarding some modern day technology? How does it apply to Shabbos? How does it apply to different halachos? You should understand the Torah so well that you shouldn't have to start thinking, well, maybe this, maybe that. If you understand the Torah so well, you understand the reasoning, understand the basis behind the halachos, you understand the basis, the explanations behind the Torah, then you don't need to be megamgein. You don't need to stutter, you don't need to hesitate. If someone asks you something that's not explicit in the Torah, if you're boidik ba'imkan, if you dig down to the depths of the Torah, to understanding, comprehending the Torah, so that if someone asks you something, even if it's not explicit in the Torah, it's not just a matter of being able to spit back out the Torah, memorizing it, and spitting it back out. The idea is if someone asks you something, even if it's not in the Torah, any question that someone asks you, if you understand the Torah, you understand the depths of the Torah, you dig down deep to understand things, then if someone asks you a question, you don't need to hesitate. You could say, oh, I know the halacha is A, and that's based on a certain premise, which we understand the Torah in a certain way, and therefore, and this is how it applies in this case. And that's according to Rashi's explanation, that's what the Gemara requires of a person. The Shinantum requires of a person that a person know the Torah and understand it so well that he should be able to answer questions about the Torah without hesitation right away. But Rashi tells us that part of it is b'doik ba'amkam. It's not just a matter of being able to repeat over the words of the Torah, but to understand the depths of the Torah as well. And the Gemara Maseches Brachos, Davov Amud Beis, the Gemara goes through a whole list of a number of things. It says the agra, the something, the primary reward, the primary purpose of something is agra de behilula mili, right? It says that the schar, the reward, for a chasana is mili, is the words. Rashi says the im sameach chosen bedvarim. The primary reward of a person going to a chasana, what's the primary purpose? It's not to eat a good smorgasbord, that's not the primary purpose. Even the dancing and singing, that's a very nice thing also. But the primary purpose is Sameach Chosan B'dvarim, to say nice things to the Chosan, to make him happy using your words. And the Gemara there says, Omar Ravo, Ravo says, Agro de Shmeitzo Svara. What's the merit? What's the reward of Shmeitzo, of studying Torah? Svara is the reasoning. The primary purpose of learning Torah, the primary goal of studying Torah is Svara, it's the reasoning of the Torah. And Rashi explains, Agro de Shmaita Svara, the reward of learning Torah is the reasoning, Shu Yogeya v'Toireyach u'mechashev l'hoven tamish al davar. It's not easy, Rashi says. Rashi acknowledges that it's not easy. That's the hard part of Torah, Shu Yogeya, that he toils v'Toireyach, and he puts an effort to mechashev, and he thinks, l'hoven tamish al davar, to understand the reasons. The primary focus of learning is not just to memorize words of Torah, but to understand them. That's the difficulty of Torah. That's what makes Torah Shebal Peh unique, and that's what makes the Torah Shebal Peh so difficult. Perhaps that it's the famous Medrash Tanchum on Parshas Noach, the Jewish people were hesitant about accepting the Torah Shebal Peh because it's difficult to have to be able to understand the reasoning behind all the halachos. But that's what Agud Shmaita, that's what the learning is all about. That's the purpose in learning Torah, is to be able to get down to the bottom of it, to understand the reasoning, the svarais, behind the words of the Torah, to be able to apply them in other scenarios as well. It's not just a matter of being able to teach others. It's not just a matter of being able to pass in Shilas. Perhaps you say, well, I'm not a Rav, so it's fine, I don't need to know. But a person needs to know for his own life. A person can't ask a Rav about every time he takes a step, every time he moves his arm, can't ask a Rav. Right? Every little thing that a person does in his life, he can't ask the Rav what to do. A person has to have an understanding. When a person asks a Shiloh from a Rav, so a person should press the Rav for an explanation of his Psak. It's a person should have a relationship with the Rav that they should feel comfortable doing that. That's a different discussion. But certainly, if a person asks a question to a Rav, am I allowed to do this on Shabbos? Could that be done? If I have to put a mezuzah on this doorway, so on and so forth. Person asks the shaila to the Rav, so ask for an explanation. You want to understand why that's the case. You should be able to continue to live your life to be able to understand it. You should be able to continue your life and be able to make decisions in your life based on those halachas. If you ask a Rav a shaila and he just tells you an answer, then you only have an answer to that one question. You can't answer any other questions based on that. But if there's an understanding of the halachas, an understanding of the Torah, then a person can apply it to his life. He can know how to conduct himself in his life, and perhaps he'll even become aware of certain situations where he didn't even realize there was an issue. But based on his understanding of the halacha, then he could realize that in other situations that there's an issue as well, and he could know to steer clear of it. He could know how to deal with it properly. And Akdamah to the Sefer Levush Mordechai and Bava Kamma, from Moshe Mordechai Epstein, He writes, he says, Ki ikir yediyas ha-toyra, loy bikiyus turas ha-dvarim. The primary knowledge of Torah is not knowing the words as they're said in the Torah. Af ikra yediyah hi svaras v'havonas ha-dvarim. The primary knowledge of Torah is understanding the words of Torah. And he quotes this Gemara in Brachos. And he says, Im echod boki b'halocha achas. If a person is a great expert in a certain area of halacha, ve'enu yodeya svaras v'hergish ha-dvarim, he doesn't know the reasonings, he doesn't have a good feel for what the halacha is all about, what's the basis of the halacha, what's it based on. We'll not say, okay, fine, so you know, he's got part. He's missing one aspect. He has one aspect, he knows the halacha, but he's missing another aspect. He doesn't understand the reasoning behind it. He says, no, the whole thing's missing. He has nothing. Why? The primary thing is understanding it. Why? By understanding the reasoning, by understanding the basis, what the halacha is based on, things could change from one extreme to the other. If a person properly understands the halacha, a person properly understands the Torah, then it could have tremendous effect. It could have transform his understanding of the way things should be from one extreme to the other extreme. And therefore, there's the importance of the havanas ha-Torah, of understanding the Torah. Just the hayrahu, just on this, just knowing the basic halacha is not sufficient. It's important to have the bedoik ba'oinkam, to delve into the depths of the reasoning of Torah, the agav the shmeitzah svara of yogeya v'toireyach v'mechashiv l'hovin tamash odover, to put in the effort to understand the reasoning, what's going on behind the scenes in the halacha, because that's the primary aspect of the halacha. Besides for that, it's a matter of a practical matter as well. If a person, there's so much Torah out there. There's so many different halachos. Even in one siman in Shulchan Aruch, you could have many, many different halachos, many different possible scenarios, how the halacha applies. And how does a person remember all that? And the answer is that if a person understands the basis, if a person understands the reasoning, the svara behind the halacha, it's much easier to remember the halacha. If a person understands what it's all based on, he could logically rebuild the halacha in his mind based on his understanding of what the fundamentals are, based on his understanding of the reasoning. So it's very important, according to the Malbim, it seems as what went wrong with Yehoyash was the fact that Yehoyado was only Hayrahu. He only instructed him, he told him what to do, he wasn't Limda, he didn't give him the understanding, the Svara of the halacha, and that's what led to, after the passing of Yehoyado, that Yehoyash was able to be influenced by the Sarah Yehuda to deviate from the ways of Hashem. Let's move on. Source number 8, page Ches. Pasuk says that despite the fact that Yehoyash did what was proper in the eyes of Hashem, Rak ha-bomois lo yisaru. Despite that, the bomois, the high places, these backyard altars, lo yisaru, they didn't go away. Oid ha'om mezabchim u'mekatrim ba-bomois. Still, the nation, the people, they were sacrificing and they were offering karbonos on these bamos. Once it was a Beis HaMikdash, so it was prohibited to have a bama. If a person wanted to bring a karbon, he had to bring it in the Beis HaMikdash. He couldn't bring it on those same backyard altars that they had been allowed to bring it on before there was a Beis HaMikdash. But despite that, even now there was a Beis HaMikdash, even in the kingdom of Yehuda, which were the more righteous people in Klal Yisrael, they still rak habomos leisaru. Still, the bomos didn't go away. They were still bringing karbonos on the bomos. And this is an idea that's not only found over here; it's found in other places as well. That even after the building of the Beis Hamikdash, even when there was a righteous king, but there was this problem with the bomos. They couldn't get rid of the bomos. And we ought to try to understand why couldn't they get rid of the bomos? What was the big issue with the bomos? Again, they were bringing karbonos to Hashem. This wasn't the Avodah Zarah, they were bringing karbonos to Hashem. Despite the fact that they wanted to bring karbonos to Hashem, but this idea of the bomos, they couldn't get past it. They couldn't get away from the bomos. So Rabbi Isaac shared Lekut Sichus Musar in Parshas Vayikra. He suggests an explanation. What was it about the bomos that they couldn't get rid of them? And he begins by talking about karbonos in general. He says the karbonos we find, and we'll get to Sefer Vayikra in a couple of weeks, in Parshas Vayikra, and Tzav, and Different pashyas we find, there's many different halachas of bringing karbonis. There's the halachas of how the, you have to shecht it, and the receive the blood, and what you have to do with the blood, and you have to bring it to the mizbeach, and how you pour it on the mizbeach, and which parts of the animal are sacrificed on the mizbeach, which parts are not, which parts are eaten, many different halachas, lots of details. And he says the truth is, those halachas are really only relevant to kohanim. Kohanim, the ones who actually bring the karbonis to the Beis HaMikdash, so it's all for the kohanim. So what about the rest of us? What part, the rest of us, we're not kohanim, so what part do we have in the karbonis? And he says, a person is makriv a karbon. What does it mean the person is makriv a karbon? Makriv means to bring close. Makes it karay, makes it close. So he brings close the carbon. The role of the Yisrael is to bring close this carbon. He brings it to the Beis HaMikdash. He, so to speak, he drops it off. Okay, there are other things he has to do. He has to say vidui on his carbon. He has to confess his sins on the carbon. He has to do smicha on the carbon. He has to lean on it. But then he gives the carbon over to the Kayhanim, and the Kayhanim processes it from there. So what's the role of the Yisrael, the regular Jew? What's his role in the carbon? And he says that we find that the role of the person bringing the carbon, the purpose, one of the purposes that a person brings the carbon is the experience of coming. When he brings his carbon and he brings it to the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, the experience of coming to Yerushalayim, coming to the Beis HaMikdash to bring his carbon, that experience is the effect that the person is supposed to be affected by bringing a carbon. He quotes the Tosfos in Maseches Bava Basra, which is on the top of page 3. The Tosfos goes on, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Soira. So what's Ki Mitzion Teitzei Soira? Why from Tzion does Torah go out? What's the significance? It's the Beis HaMikdash, that's Avoida. Ki Mitzion Teitzei Avoida. That's with the service of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. Why Ki Mitzion Teitzei Soira? So Tosfos says, this is an idea that we've spoken about previously, Fisho Yoroye Kedusha Gedoyla. When a person would bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, to Yerushalayim, he would see great holiness. The Kohanim oiskim ba'avoida, he'd see the Kohanim rushing back and forth doing the avoida. Kohanim zrizim heim, rushing back and forth doing the avoida, various avoidas in the Beis HaMikdash. So when he saw that, he mechavin libo yoiser liyiras shamayim, v'lumay Torah, who would focus his heart more on fearing Hashem and learning Torah. It was a tremendous experience, a sight to see. Kohanim and Leviim, whose lives were devoted to avoidas Hashem, when they weren't working the Beis HaMikdash, they were studying Torah in Yerushalayim, to see these people who were completely devoted, whose lives were completely centered around Avodas Hashem and Torah, and to see that Avodah going on in the Beis HaMikdash, it was a tremendous thing, and made a tremendous impression upon a person. It says, Kedashinim B'Sifri, it talks about when the Sifri makes a drasha regarding Maaseh Sheni, the Pasuk says, L'man Tilmad L'Yiro, you should bring your Maaseh Sheni up to Yerushalayim, L'man Tilmad L'Yiro, so that you should learn to fear Hashem. So the Sifri makes a drasha, Godol Maaseh Sheni. Maaseh Sheni is so great, why? Shemevi L'Dei Talmud. It brings a person to studying Torah. Maaseh Sheni means I take the fruits that I grew in my field, I bring them to eat them myself in Yerushalayim, and somehow that brings me to learning Torah. How does that work? He has Baruch Hashem. Hashem blessed him with a good crop, so he has to take a tenth, and he brings it up to Yerushalayim to eat. And say, take some time for him to eat that food in Yerushalayim. So he would stay in Yerushalayim until he ate all his Ma'aser Sheni. For Yeroyeh, and he would see Shekulam Oiskim B'Melechas Shemayim V'Avoida. He would see in Yerushalayim that they were all busy with Melechas Shemayim, with serving Hashem, was doing, learning Torah, or doing mitzvah, he's doing avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. He would be influenced, inevitably, he'd be influenced by his surroundings, by all that avodah Hashem that was going on around him, and he would focus, he would inevitably improve in his Yiras Shemayim, in his Oisik B'Torah, he would want to be inspired to go up to the higher levels of Yiras Shemayim, of fear of heaven, and to be Oisik B'Torah and learning Torah. That was the effect that bringing the carbon had on a person. Besides for actually bringing the carbon, whatever that itself does, but the experience of being oimid lefnei Hashem, coming into the Paltman Shamelech, in the palace of the king, the capital city of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, where everything is focused around avodas Hashem, serving Hashem, with his Yiras Shemayim, limud HaTorah, avoiding the Beis HaMikdash, that was the experience of bringing a carbon. Just the hakrovas HaKarbon, bringing the carbon close, had a tremendous effect on the person by all that that he saw around him. So he says that Isaac shared, there's actually two aspects to a karma. One aspect is the karma itself, that there's tremendous ideas, all sorts of soidois, secrets, things that we're not necessarily familiar with, hidden ideas behind bringing a karban. The karban accomplishes tremendous things, not necessarily things that are tangible that we can see and relate to, but accomplishes tremendous things. But besides for that, it has the effect of bringing a person to be oimed b'nei Hashem, bringing this inspiration of coming to Yerushalayim, coming to Beis Hamikdash, bringing a karban, and the effect that it has on a person. And he says there's a well-known machloikas, well-known disagreement between the Ramban and the Rambam. The Rambam in Moir Nevuchim writes that the purpose of karbanos is to distance a person from Avodah Zarah. He says the Kasdim and the Mitzriim, they had their ways of serving their gods, which had to do with sacrifices, and so on and so forth. And so for the Jewish people, that was the environment that they grew up in. That was the environment the Jewish people had been in before they got to Torah. And so in order for the Jewish people to be able to abandon that, you couldn't go completely to the other extreme. And Rambam writes in Moreh Nevuchim, he speaks about a great length, how it's not in the nature of a person to completely abandon that which he's familiar with beforehand. So therefore Hashem says, instead of serving the gods of Mitzrayim and of the Kasdim, instead of serving them, so bring karbanos to me, bring sacrifices to me, you could just slaughter them and sprinkle the blood and you burn them, do all those things, do it for me. That's what the Rambam writes. And the Rambam says, what are you talking about? He says, karbanos were brought in times of Noach, before there was any Avodah Zarah, karbanos were brought by Hevel, so there's no Avodah Zarah then. The Ramban, it's on the paper over here, it's quite lengthy, so I underlined some of the main points. So the Ramban says, no, it doesn't make any sense. If you take a look, he says, right before the first underline, right before it says, V'hinei Noach, he says, V'hinei heim divrei havoi. He dismisses the words of the Rambam as they're not true. There's no validity to the words of the Rambam. He points out, Noach brought karbonos, and Hevel brought karbonos. And at the end of the day, the Ramban talks about the idea which we spoke about previously, that the sacrificing of the animal corresponds to what really should happen to the person, and so on and so forth. He speaks at it at a bit of length. It's on the paper if you're interested in looking at it yourselves. And he ends off, "Alderach ha'emes yish b'karbonos soid ne'elam." And he says, the truth is that the karbonos, there's hidden ideas behind it, and dot, 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 so on and so forth, hidden ideas which we're not necessarily familiar with. And says Rabbi Isaac Sher, he says that it could be we can make peace between the Rambam and the Ramban. We can say that surely the Rambam agrees that there's such an idea that there's hidden ideas, there's all sorts of lofty spiritual ideas that the Karbanos accomplish in the world. No doubt about it. But the Rambam's telling us there's another aspect as well. There's another aspect to the Karbanos, which is to bring a person in front of Hashem, to bring a person to the state of Oymi Lefnei HaMelech, of standing in front of Hashem, to elevate the person through the bringing of the carbon itself. And he says that the truth is that one might have said that really that a regular person shouldn't be able to bring a carbon. He says the bringing of carbonos, it's such a lofty and elevated spiritual endeavor that perhaps it should only be limited to very special and holy people. Just like the Avodah on Yom Kippur. The Avodah on Yom Kippur is a tremendous Avodah. It accomplishes great things in the world. The Yom Kippur, that Avodah is such a special Avodah. That Avodah has to be done only by the Kohen Gadol. Only by the Kohen Gadol, who's the greatest Oved Hashem, the chief Oved Hashem that there is. Only the Kohen Gadol, he could bring the Karbanos on Yom Kippur. So he said, perhaps one could have argued, and perhaps it would have been appropriate, that the bringing of Karbanos at all should be limited only to maybe Kohanim. Only the people who are completely devoted to Avodas Hashem, those people to bring Karbanos is such a special thing, makes connections between Hashem and the Jewish people, so lofty and elevated, such things, such great things, perhaps should be limited only to very special people, and a regular person shouldn't be able to be in Karban. Says that's where the Rambam comes in, and the Rambam says that despite that, it was worthwhile to allow regular people to bring karbanos, even though they might not have the same appreciation for the karbanos. They don't understand what the karbanos are all about, perhaps. They don't understand what a carbon accomplishes. A regular person off the street, doesn't necessarily understand what the carbon is accomplished. And perhaps the person could even come to think that he's doing Hashem a favor by bringing him a carbon. He could think that I'm giving Hashem a gift. Hashem needs carbonis. Apparently, Hashem likes steak. So I'm bringing Hashem a carbon. A person could come to think that. But the Rambam is telling you that why could a regular person bring a carbon? And the answer is that the Rambam says that Hashem felt it was worthwhile. It was worthwhile that a regular person, even though he might not have the proper reverence for the bringing of a carbon, but despite that, so that a person should be able to get this experience of being omer b'fnei Hashem, have the experience of coming to the Beis HaMikdosh, to the Mokum of the Ashras HaShchinah, to see the Kayhanim in action, to see the Avodas Hashem that took place in Yerushalayim. It was worthwhile for to have a regular person be able to bring his carbon to the Beis HaMikdosh, so he should be able to distance himself, so he should increase his Yirat Shamayim, he shouldn't fall prey to the taiva, to the desire for Avodah Zarah. It's worthwhile to sacrifice on a person's reverence for karbonos, for a person's appreciation for karbonos. And maybe in some way the karbonos will be degraded by the fact that a regular person could bring them and he doesn't have that same appreciation. But it's worthwhile so that a person should be able to come and get that experience of being omer b'fnei Hashem, that experience of coming in front of Hashem and seeing what Avodas Hashem is all about, seeing the Kayhanim, seeing the Levim, seeing everything that takes place in Yerushalayim, it's worthwhile for them to get that experience. It says about Isaac Sher, there's two things. Certainly, yes, the Ramban's correct, that there's the behind the Karbanos, all sorts of hidden ideas, all sorts of lofty spiritual ideas behind the Karbanos, is true. But the fact that a regular person can come and bring a Karban, that the Rambam says, why is that the case? The reason why that's the case is to distance him from Avodah Zarah. This way, to increase a person's Yirat Shamayim, to bring a person close, to attract people, to come to the Beis HaMikdosh, and get this dose of Yirat Shamayim that a person gets when he comes there, that was the purpose in allowing a regular person to bring a carbon. So Isaac Sher says, that perhaps is the reason why it was so hard to separate people from the Bamois. On the Bamois, the person had the opportunity. When a person was able to make a mizbeach in his backyard, he could bring the carbon himself. He can engage in this lofty spiritual endeavor of actually bringing the carbon to Hashem. What the Kayhanim could do in the Beis HaMikdash, and what perhaps should have been limited only to Kayhanim, a person has that opportunity to engage in that. It was very difficult for the people to be able to leave that. To be able to be limited, to only be able to drop off their carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, and have it processed by the Kehanim, that was very difficult for a person who previously was able to do this avoida, this tremendous lofty avoida himself, to be able to connect with Hashem through the karbonos. For a person to be able who was previously able to do that, to suddenly stop doing that was extremely difficult for a person. They couldn't tear themselves away from it. It was such a special avodah, such a special experience that the people, they couldn't leave it to be limited to just bring their karbanos to the Beis HaMikdash. They couldn't, to only have that second aspect of omer b'fnei Hashem without the aspect of the bringing of the karbanos itself, with all the hidden ideas that are behind it, with its loftiness, with its tremendous spiritual accomplishments. The people could not leave that behind. That's why they were so attached and connected to their bamos. Rabbi Isaac Sher goes on to say, he says, we find in Maseches Brachos is a very interesting machlokes. Take a look on page 4, source number 11. The Gemara Maseches Brachos is a very famous machlokes. It says, Itmar, Rabbi Yossi Reb Chanina Omar, Tfilois Ovois Tiknum. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Reb Chanina, says that the Tfilois, the prayers, Ovois Tiknum. Our forefathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they instituted them, they instituted the Tfilois, the prayers that we say to Hashem. Rabbi Shuben Levi Omar, Rabbi Shuben Levi says, Tfilois keneged tmitin tiknum. No, the Tfilois corresponds to the Karbonis. It corresponds to the Karbonis. So you have a machlokes between Beis Reb Chanina and Rabbi Shuben Levi about what the Karbonis are based on. Are they instituted by the Ovois, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or do they correspond to the Karbonis? Says Rabbi Isaac Sher, here as well, we could say that there's no machlokes. The same with the two aspects to a Karbon, there's two aspects to Tfilah as well. The tefillahs that we say are not limited to the simple translation of the words. The tefillahs that we say, there's a reason why we have specific tefillahs that we say, and it's because the Anshe Knesset HaGedoyla, when they put together the tefillahs, they instituted what tefillahs we should say. They instituted tefillahs that have all sorts of remazim, hints and soidais, secrets, hidden ideas behind them. We can't necessarily connect to them, but the tefillahs that we say have tremendous capability. They have all sorts of, they represent all sorts of ideas, even if we're not familiar with them. And that's one aspect of the tefillah. The tefillah, again, similar to the karbanos, is again, it's a lofty, spiritual endeavor, davening to Hashem. There's all sorts of accomplishments that happen through our tefillahs in the world, despite the fact we might not be familiar with them. That's one aspect of tefillah. There's another aspect of tefillah, which is to be omer b'fnei Hashem, the fact that a person realizes that he's standing in front of Hashem and talking to Hashem, that's an aspect of tefillah as well. He says that we find in the Rambam, in source number 12, the Rambam talks about preparing for davening. It says, Ketzad hi ha-kavona, what's the kavona? How does one be mechavim in his tefillah? How does one have kavona in his tefillah? It says, Sheifane es liboy mikol ha-machshavos, he should empty out his heart from all thoughts. He should see himself as if he's standing in front of the Shechina, as if he's standing in front of Hashem. That's not the idea primarily, so he should be able to think about the words that he's saying. The primary idea is that Rambam clear his mind so that what? So he could focus on the fact that he's standing in front of Hashem. Just the fact, still focus on the fact that he's standing in front of the Melech Malchei Amlochim, the king of the entire world, he's standing in front of Hashem when he's davening. Says by Isaac Sher, those two tefillahs, those two aspects of tefillah correspond to the two aspects of karbanos, and those are the two ideas being expressed by Rabbi Yisrael Chanina and Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi in the Gemara. So the same way by karbanos, we say the karban itself accomplishes tremendous spiritual things in the world. It's lofty, and it's beyond our comprehension. So too the tefillahs themselves, that's tefillahs always tiknum. When Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina said tefillahs always tiknum, that means Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they instituted tefillahs that have tremendous power in the spiritual world. They have tremendous ideas behind them that we might not necessarily be familiar with, but they're there. Just like the karbanos have also have soidos, have hidden ideas, the tefillahs as well have hidden ideas behind them. And that's one aspect. And the other aspect is, just as like the karbanos, the Rambam tells us that despite the fact that since they're so holy and so lofty, they should only be limited to special people, to very holy people. But despite that, the Rambam says that no, even a regular person is allowed to bring the karbon, so they should get the experience of Avim B'fnei Hashem. So too, tefillahs also. Maybe tefillahs also should be limited to only people who could relate to the ideas behind them. It almost seems like a waste. The person says the tefillah and he doesn't understand what's going on. Doesn't understand the accomplishments that the words that he's saying make in the world. It's a waste. Perhaps only very special, limited people should be able to daven, to say the tefillahs. That we have, Reb Shub, but Levi tells us no. There's another aspect. The tefillahs were also they were niskan. They were established corresponding to karbanos. Just like the karbanos, we allow a person to be a karbon, even though he might not fully comprehend what it's all about. He might not have the proper reverence, but it's important to have the experience of Avim B'fnei Hashem. So too in the tefillahs, says Reb Shub and Levi, k'neged tmidin tiknum. The tefillahs correspond to the karbanos in the way that also the tefillahs, a person may engage in tefillah, even though he can't fully relate to what tefillah is all about, to what the ideas that are alluded to in the tefillahs, even if a person can't relate to them, but still to the experience of Avim B'fnei Hashem, it's worthwhile for a person to be able to daven. And therefore, he says that the tefillah is important in tefillah to take advantage, even if we can't completely relate to all the ideas in the tefillah, all of the things that are being alluded to, the lofty, more mystical ideas in the davening. But it's important for a person to get out of davening is this experience of Eimim B'fnei Hashem, similar to the one who brings the karbon, who goes up to Yerushalayim, and he goes to the Beis HaMikdash, and he's inspired to grow in his Yerush Shemayim, to grow in his Avodas Hashem. That has to be our experience in tefillah as well, to focus on the fact of Avodas B'fnei Hashem, to stop before we daven, to contemplate, to think about, we're going to stand in front of the Rebbeinu Shloilam. But tefillah, that's important to take advantage of it. Let's continue. Source 13. V'yoyme Yehoyosh al-Kayhanim. So now Yehoyosh become king. So he says to the Kohanim, Kol Kesef HaKodoshim Asher Yuvo Veis Hashem, all of the holy monies that are brought to the house of Hashem, to the Beis HaMikdash, which includes three different kinds of monies, which the Navi lists, Kesef Oiver, that's the monies of passing through, which the Torah explained. That's talking about the Machtsa Shekel. Machtsa Shekel has to be brought every year in Adar. Right? The Pasuk in Parshas Kisiso says, Kol Ha'oiver Ala Pekudim, right? Everyone who passes through to be counted. So Kesef Oiver is referring to the Machtsa Shekel. So that's one kind of holy money. Ish Kesef Nafshayis Erkoi, then there's the money that a man brings, the erech, the value of the person, which is not really the value of the person, rather in Parshas B'chukaisai, it goes to the Parsha of Arochin, where the Torah gives a fixed value to each person based on their gender and based on their age. So that's kesef nafsha, ish kesef nafsha is erkoi, a money that a person brings as a donation. A person donates to the Beis HaMikdash a person's erech, could be his own erech, could be someone else's erech, but the amount prescribed in the Torah for that particular person. That's the second kind. And kol kesef asher ya'ale alev ish lahavi Beis Hashem. Kol kesef, any money that's ya'ale alev ish, that it goes up on the heart of a person, that a person's heart is aroused to bring to the house of Hashem, all those different kinds of monies, what should happen with them? Yikhu lohem makayhanim. The kehanim should take them, ish mi'es makaroi, each person from his own acquaintances should take those monies. And the kohanim then, they should be responsible to use the money that they receive to strengthen the weaknesses, the breaches in the Beis Hamikdash, the Chol Asher Yimotzei Shom Bedek, wherever they'll find any breaches. Yehoyosh instructs the kohanim they should receive these monies that people bring as donations to the Beis Hamikdash. They should take them, and when they see something in the Beis Hamikdash that needs to be repaired, they should use those monies to hire the proper people, the proper workers, to repair the breaches in the Beis HaMikdash. What are these breaches in the Beis HaMikdash? The Mefarshim say that although at this point the Beis HaMikdash was around 155 years old, despite that, Shlomi HaMelech had built the Beis HaMikdash so well that really at this point there should not have been any need for any repairs in the Beis HaMikdash. It was only because Asalya, we spoke about before, Yehoyosh's grandmother, Asalya, when she took over control, and she served the Baal, and she facilitated that others should serve the Baal as well, so they wreaked havoc in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, the Beis HaMikdash, now when Yehoyosh took over, was in bad shape, and it was in need of repairs. So what does Yehoyosh say? What's going to be the procedure? How are we going to go about the repairs? He figures instead of making a whole committee, a building committee, a repairs committee, instead, what we'll have is each Kayin will take responsibility. When an acquaintance of yours comes to the Beis HaMikdash to bring a donation, you take his money, and when you see something that needs to be repaired, use that money to repair the breaches in the Beis HaMikdash. The Radak points out that there's a very important question that has to be asked on this Pasuk. What's the first kind, the three kinds of money that Yehoyosh tells the Kohanim they should collect to repair the breaches in the Beis HaMikdash? What's the first kind? Kesef Oiver. What's kesef oiver? That's the money for the machtsa shekel. Now, if we're going to learn Pasha Shkolm tomorrow, we better know what's this machtsa shekel thing all about. Right? So what's the purpose of the machtsa shekel? And when it comes to Nisan, then they have to start bringing the karbonis, the communal karbonis that are brought in the Beis HaMikdash, they're brought from communal money. But the Torah tells us that every time Nisan comes around, you have to start bringing the karbonis from a new collection. Has to be a new collection of money, and the karbana is starting from Nisan. The communal karbanas have to be brought from a new collection of money. Every year there has to be a new collection, and in Nisan you start bringing from the new collection. The machtsa shekel is the money that everyone brings. They bring the machtsa shekel, it's all gathered together, and a portion is taken off, and that's the money that's used to buy the communal karbanas. The machtsa shekel is, that's the purpose of it is, that money should be used to buy the communal karbanis, buy the animals that are used for the communal karbanis. Says the Radak, what's going on? Yehoyosh, you're taking the money, the machtsa shekel money, which has to be brought to the communal karbanis, and you're going to use it to repair the breaches in the Beis HaMikdash, and use it for housekeeping. What's going to be with the communal karbanis? The point of collecting the machtsa shekel is to be able to bring the communal karbanis, which is why we have to do it in Adar, so you can bring the from in Nisan from the new money. So how are you going to use the kesef oiver? How are you going to take that money that's meant, that's dedicated for the communal karbanos and use it for repairs in the Beis HaMikdash? Very good question. So the Radak suggests that during the days of Asalya, where the primary service was the service of Baal, not too many people were interested in serving Hashem. So he says that people during that time, they didn't bring their Machzis HaShekel. There wasn't much Avodas Hashem going on, so they didn't bring their Machzis HaShekel. The Kabbalists, the people were sacrificing to the Baal instead of to Hashem, so they didn't bring their Machzis HaShekel. Now when Yehoyash took over, there were a lot of people who regretted what they had done during the reign of Asalya, and they felt bad that they hadn't brought their Machzis HaShekel in those years. So now when Yehoyash took over and they got the Avodah, the service in the Beis HaMikdash, started again, so they brought not only the Machzis HaShekel that they had to bring for that year, but they brought that which they owed from previous years, but they hadn't brought in previous years during the reign of Asalya. They brought those Machzis HaShekels as well to make up for that which they hadn't done. It says, therefore, there was extra, there was a surplus. There was the Machzis HaShekels from that year, which was sufficient to bring the communal karbanos. But there was a surplus of Machzis HaShekel from previous years, which people hadn't brought their Machzis HaShekels to the Beis HaMikdash. Now those extra Machzis HaShekels, that's what's being referred to when it says Kesef Oiver, that the Machzis HaShekel money was used to fix the breaches, to repair the Beis HaMikdash. It's referring to those extra Machzis HaShekels that came from people paying up their debts from previous years. The third kind of Kesef that's mentioned, third kind of money that Yehoyash mentions that's brought to the Beis HaMikdash is called Kesef Asher Ya'al Le'alev Ish Lohavi Beis Hashem. Any kesef, any money that's ya'ale alev ish, and it comes into a person's heart, that a person's heart desires to bring to the house of Hashem. It's an interesting language. Asher ya'ale alev ish lavi beis Hashem. And the Chidor writes that perhaps the idea is that we find the Gemara as Gemara in Meseches Shavuos, source Yod Dalid. The Gemara there makes a distinction between donations, a commitment that a person makes to give a donation to Hekdesh, and a commitment that a person other commitments that a person makes to give tzedakah perhaps, and the Gemara says that a commitment to give money to Hekdesh, that commitment is binding once a person has even thinks about it, even without articulating the intent to give such a donation. It says, the Gemara, quote the Gemara, it says, Moitzah Sfasecha Tishmor V'Asisa. And the pasuk talks about karbanis, it says, Moitzah Sfasecha, that's what comes out of your lips. Tishmor V'Asisa, you should guard it and you should do it. Say, Ein Li'elosh Chaytzi B'Sfasa. I only know from there that a person is bound by his commitment if he actually articulates it, it comes out from his lips. Gomar B'Liba Minayin, if committed to it in his heart. How do we know that a person still is required to bring a carbon? Talmud Loimar, Kol Nediv Lev. It says, anyone whose heart is dedicated. And that's a pasuk by the donating to the Mishkan. But the Gemara says that Shani Hosam Dechsiv Kol, the Gemara is asking a question without getting into the discussion of the Gemara, but the Gemara says, Shani Hosam Dechsiv Kol Nediv Lev. It says, when it comes to donations to the Beis HaMikdash, to Hekdesh, there it's different because we have a special pasuk that says Kol Nediv Lev. What's the pasuk of Kol Nediv Lev? So if you look in Pasuk, and I'm sorry, in Source Tesvav, which is again a Pasuk in Divrei Ayomim, right? This is the Pasuk that the Gemara is quoting. This is again, it's a similar, it's actually somewhat resembles our Aftaira. This is later on, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, after his father Ochaz wreaked havoc in the Beis HaMikdash. So now his son Chizkiyahu, who was a righteous king, so once again they repaired the Beis HaMikdash, and they wanted to get the Avodah started again. So at that point, Chizkiyo tells the people, says, "Atomi leisim yedchem laHashem. Now you have committed yourselves to Hashem. Goishu v'haviu zvachim v'soidus leveis Hashem. So now bring karbanos, bring the offerings of thanksgiving to the house of Hashem. V'haviu hakol zvachim v'soidus. And the people they brought sacrifices and thanksgiving offerings. V'chol nediv leiv oilos. And anyone who had dedicated his heart, they brought karbanos oilo." So the Gemara says, what does it mean, anyone who dedicated his heart, that even a thought, a commitment within a person's heart, is a sufficient commitment to require him to bring that which he committed in his heart. That's binding. The person committed in his heart to bring to Hekdesh, that's binding. Says the Chidah, That's what the pasuk means. Ashiyale alev ish, kol kesef ashiyale alev ish. Any money that a person in his heart committed to bring, he was required to bring. Why? L'holi beis Hashem. Because it's committing to bring it to the house of Hashem, therefore the thought in his heart was sufficient, a sufficient commitment to require him to now bring that money to the beis HaMikdash. That's what he says. And that's the halacha. The halacha, and the pasuk can talk about it in Hilchos Tzedakah. There's a difference between hektish and between tzedakah. That when it comes to hektish, hektish is unique in the fact that a person's commitment in his heart, in his thought, to donate to hektish, that's binding, as opposed to tzedakah, just the thought in a person's heart, is not necessarily binding until he actually articulates it. So why is this so? Why? I said, okay, it was a source of a pasuk, I understand, but why? What's it all about? Perhaps we could dig a little deeper, what we spoke about before. I want to get to understand the mamik and the svaros, to understand what's it all about. So I was thinking that perhaps we could explain why, specifically when it comes to hektish, the thought in a person's heart is binding. And it's like this. Reb Chaim Friedlander in the Sifsei Chaim, it's in the volume, it's called Midos Va'avodas Hashem Chelek Beis. He talks about machshava, he talks about thoughts. And he says like this. He says, he finds a very interesting thing. There's three ways that a person does things. Right? A person does actions, a person speaks, and a person thinks. Those are the three ways that a person works. Right? He does actions, he speaks, and he thinks. And he says, in our minds, our perspective, the way we see it, is that which is the most significant, which is the most important, which has the most effect, are actions. Actions, you do things with your hands, your feet, you do things, the things that we do are the most effective, and they're the most important. And the second, and from our perspective, is speech. Okay, it might not be as great as actions, but it would seem in our mind it accomplishes the second most to our actions. And the third is our thoughts. Thoughts, they don't do too much. Right? And from our perspective, the thoughts, our machshavos, our thoughts, are third on the list of significance and accomplishment. But he says, when it comes to ruchnius, when it comes to spiritual things, the opposite is true. Our thoughts, our machshavos, are the most important and the most effective in the spiritual realm. He says, the reason why, from our perspective, is we see actions as being the most important, the most significant, is because the way we relate to the world is through our senses. The only way we can relate to the world is through our senses. We see things, we smell things, we taste things, we hear things. That's how we relate to the world. And therefore, actions, when we do something, those we can relate to the world most through our senses. When we do things, doing things is most connected to our senses. You feel things, you touch things, you hear things, you see things. When you act, you could see something, you could feel what's happening because of your actions. So therefore, we consider those to be the most significant. The speaking, so you can't feel that what you speak, right? You can only hear it, you can't see it either. So therefore, although it's not, we don't see it as being as significant and as important as actions, because our senses don't relate to it as much. It's less connected to our senses. We can only hear speech. You can't relate to it with any other of our senses. But at least it's more than machshava, because machshava, none of your senses relate to your machshava at all. What goes on in your mind, your thoughts, nothing. You can't see it, you can't hear it, you can't touch it, taste it, nothing, smell it. You can't relate to it at all through your senses, and therefore, in our mind, it's least significant. He says, when it comes to ruchnius, when it comes to spirituality, the opposite is true. The less it's connected to our physical, the less it's connected to our senses, the more spiritual it is. The more something's connected to our physical senses, the more physical it is. If it's an action that comes about through our senses, through our actions, through our body, that's the least spiritual. The speech is a little more spiritual. It is not as much of our senses involved. And he says the proof is that it comes through the most important part of our body. Our speech comes through from our head, which is the most important part of our body. So speech is a little bit on a higher level spiritually than actions. But the highest level spiritually, the highest level, the most effective, the things that have the most effect on the ruchnius, on the spirituality, is our thoughts. Our thoughts are not at all connected to anything physical. They're not connected to any of our senses. And therefore, they're the most effective in the spiritual world. That's what the Chaim Friedlander says. And he says that he actually quotes from Nefesh HaChayim, from Chaim Volozhiner, and that's the explanation of Gemara Maseches Yuma. Gemara Maseches Yuma says, "Hurei Aveiro, Koshimei Aveiro." Thoughts about sinning are worse than sinning itself. And you see the Gemara and you say, what? Well, how could thoughts of Aveira, thoughts of sins, be worse than sins themselves? Because from our perspective, the most significant, the most effective are our actions. So that's why we look at the Gemara and we say, this Gemara is a shver Gemara. This is a difficult Gemara. How could it be that the thoughts of Aveira are worse than actions of Aveira? But says in Chaim Frieden, based on what we're explaining, the Nefesh HaChayim, Chaim Volozhiner says that it absolutely makes a lot of sense. That the explanation is that since our minds are most connected to the spiritual, our actions, they're connected to the spiritual, definitely it affects our spirituality. But our minds are most connected to our spirituality. They're most connected and intertwined with our spirituality because they are not dependent upon our physical senses. Our thoughts and our mind is the most spiritual. Since it's the most connected, therefore it has the most potential for destruction, has the most potential for negative effect. Our actions, they affect our spirituality, but since they're more connected to the physical world, so therefore they less affect our spirituality than our thoughts. Our thoughts, because thoughts are completely spiritual, because they're more connected to spirituality, when those thoughts aren't proper, when they're hurei aveira, thoughts of aveira, they have an even stronger effect on our spirituality, because they're more connected to our ruchnius than our spirituality. So I thought perhaps that's why, when it comes to a person making a commitment to do something. So if it's a commitment to something that's completely spiritual, when it's a commitment to Hekdesh, which is Kedusha, holiness and spirituality, so then that could come about from the Machshava, which is completely spiritual. They relate to each other. There's a connection between them. When my Machshava, in my thoughts, which is the most spiritual aspect of my being, when I have that thought to donate something to Hekdesh, which is completely spiritual, a connection is made between the two, and that's binding, and that's effective. But when it comes to things that are not completely spiritual, tzedakah, it's a mitzvah, but it's not complete ruchnius, it's not complete spirituality and kedusha, so there, my machshava is not enough. I need something that has some level of physical to it. It needs something that's in my senses. I need at least a dibur. I need at least to speak it out in order for it to be effective on something physical. Something that's not completely spiritual, that involves a physical aspect as well, that needs a commitment that has both physical and spiritual in it. But when it comes to Hekdesh, which is completely spiritual, it's complete Kedusha and holiness, there's no physical involved at all, it's completely holy and dedicated to Hashem, so there, that's where my machshava, which is spiritual, that's where it can have an effect, that's where it can make a connection, and my machshava, my commitment in my mind, and my thoughts, that's binding when it comes to Hekdesh, because that's complete Kedusha, it's complete spirituality, and the two connect to each other, and therefore, that the... that sort of machshava, that sort of commitment is binding when it comes to Hekdesh in the world of spirituality, in the world of ruchnius. There's plenty more to say, but I think we'll stop over here. If we go on, we're going to be here at least another 25 minutes, so we'll stop over here.